Just saying to Debbie earlier, what a fantastic thing these cardigans with pockets are. I've never been a cardigan person. I think it's a sort of, exactly, it's a getting older thing. But needs must, you know what I mean? When you need to put that, because fiddling, yeah, anyway, it's much easier.
The reading is from Genesis chapter 6, verses 9 to 22. It can be found on page 8 of the Pew Bibles. Noah and the flood. This is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make rooms in it, and coat it with pitch inside and out. This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. Make a roof for it, leaving below the roof an opening 1 cubit high all around. Put a door in the side of the ark, and make lower, middle, and upper decks. I am going to bring flood waters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens. Every creature that has the breath of life in it, everything on earth will perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, and every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and for them. Noah did everything just as God commanded him. This is the word of the Lord.
Now, I don't know about you, but whenever I think of Noah, I tend to think of the... It's very much a kid's story, isn't it? It's one of these first stories we tell kids in Sunday school or, whatever. In fact, I'll confess to you that the thing that sticks in my mind when I think of Noah is an episode of The Simpsons where, for some reason, I can't remember what it was, but Ned Flanders was Noah. And he says to Homer, I put two of every kind in the ark, but just boys, we don't want any hanky-pankity. So, I don't think that would have worked very well, really. But Noah, the story of Noah, rather than being a kid's story, it's much more like Terminator, which has the famous line, come with me if you want to live. It's got that feeling of impending disaster, and there's only one way of surviving this disaster. Going back through Genesis, obviously chapters 1 and 3, we've got the story of creation, and then we've got the fall. And then in 4, we've got the story of Cain and Abel. 5 is quite a strange chapter. It's about the people living for hundreds and hundreds of years, and we've got giants. It's all a bit like Lord of the Rings, really. And then we get to chapter 6, and surprise, surprise, humanity is going wrong. Things are going wrong and people are going bad and God is not very happy with it. So God comes to Noah, he tells him he's going to destroy the earth, the people in it, and he gives a way out. He talks about the ark and goes into great detail about how you make the ark, about how you need to put animals on it, put food on it, and what the ark's going to look like. But in and amongst that, there's a very interesting point that God says he's going to make a new covenant with Noah and with mankind. So, this is one of those times when God gets really angry and tells his friend on earth, one of the humans, that he's going to destroy things and he's angry and he's so frustrated. You can see why. You know, things were bad at that time. People had already fallen away from the time of Adam and Eve and things were getting worse and worse. But it's not the only time in the Bible when God tells somebody this is what he's going to do. A little bit further on in Genesis, in the story of Abraham, Of course, Abraham's nephew, Lot, if you remember, had gone off and lived in a place called Sodom. And God was very angry with the town of Sodom, and he said, I'm going to destroy it. So Abraham does this fantastic bit where he haggles with God, saying, well, if there were 50 good people there, would you destroy it? 40? He sort of beats him down to 10. So Abraham negotiates with God in this story later on in Genesis. And similarly, in the book of Exodus, God is furious with the people of Israel, because if you remember, they've come across out of the Red Sea, and no sooner are they safe and on their way through the desert to the promised land, Moses goes up the mountain, the people make a golden calf. And God is so furious. He says to Moses, I want to destroy this people. Let's just start again. We'll build a family just from you. Forget the rest of the people of Israel. And Moses says, no, come on, God. Come on, please. And begs for mercy for the people. It made me wonder, that's in the Old Testament, long ago. But does God get angry with things today? Are we any better today than we were in the time of Noah? You mentioned North Korea earlier. There's places in the world where there's terrible things going on. We sung about great is the darkness. And you don't have to look very far around the world to see darkness. Does God see it? Does God get angry? In Psalm 94, there's a fantastic verse. It says this, does he who made the eye not see? Does he who made the ear not hear? And it's almost saying, if you think God can't see, if you think God's not aware of all the things that are wrong in the world, then you're fooling yourself. Of course God sees it. So God sees what's wrong now just the same as he did in the time of Noah. Because we're the same. People are the same. Same as they were then. In verses 11 and 12, it talks about humanity being violent and corrupt. Now, when you think of corrupt, maybe you think of people taking a backhander or, you know, not playing it straight. But for me, one of the things I think of when I think of being corrupt is metal. And when iron gets corrupted and gets rusty, it's good for nothing. It's just flaky and weak, and it can hurt you. That's what corrupt is. It's going for something that's useful, something that's useless and even dangerous. And we're the same today. We're slippery and tricksy. That's the human race. Here's some interesting facts for you. The 85 richest people in the world have the same amount of money between them as 3.5 billion poorest people. So you could sit people in quite easily the front part of this church, and they'd have the same amount of money between them as 3.5 billion of the poorest people in the world. Here's another fact that tells us how the world is really not that different. Avoidable hunger. Avoidable hunger is the biggest cause of death in the world. It's not wars. It's not disease, it's not floods or rains or earthquakes. It's avoidable hunger. Hunger that could be avoided if we shared food between us. But we're the same, aren't we? We're the same people. We're corrupt, just like the people in the time of Noah. And what's worse today, in some ways, is I think we delude ourselves, don't we? If you listen to programs like Steve Wright in the Afternoon, which I love, or read tabloids or any other papers you could think of, there seems to be an atmosphere in the media of everything's all right there. It's world's full of happy, decent people who really would help you if your car broke down. They'd come out of their house and help you. And there are people like that out there. We know that. But humanity itself has got problems. It's imperfect. We're tricksy people. That's why we need salvation. I don't know if you've ever seen a program called Breaking Bad. It's quite full on. I don't necessarily recommend it. My boys watched it. I watched it unwittingly out of the corner of my eye, wincing and trying to avoid it. But it's an all too real story about a chemistry teacher who ends up as this drug lord. And it can happen today, anything can happen. People can just turn and turn to darkness. In the story of Noah, then, we're given the fact that God has found a way to save Noah and his family and the animals and anyone who wants to come into the ark by this big boat. That's the way of salvation. But also there's a covenant. There's a promise. There's a new deal, if you like. Whatever's happened before, whatever corruption and bad things have happened before, God is promising a new deal. In the United States in the 1930s, that's what happened there. There'd been the depression, terrible things happened, people starving. And the government said to people, having a new deal. Forget what's happened before, a new start. And that's what God likes to do, especially in the Old Testament. So what is a covenant? It's a political agreement. It's an agreement between a superior power and an inferior power. It's like a handshake, if you will. It's a deal. So why does God in the Old Testament keep making deals with the people of Israel and with the human race when he kind of knows we're going to break them? Well, I think what's important is that God will always show that he will keep his promises. No matter if we keep them or not, or if we break our promises, God will always keep his promises. And this is why the Bible is so fantastic, because the Bible is full of God's promises that we know he will keep. So when Jesus says in the Bible, I'll be with you to the ends of the earth, we know it's true. We know that whatever promises God makes, whatever deals God makes, he will keep his end of the agreement. So we've got salvation in the ark. That's the way people are going to be saved. That's the way humans are going to be saved from the disaster to come. And there's also this idea of the new covenant. There's a covenant God's making with humanity. And if we believe in Jesus, he will save us the same way. He will offer us salvation and then put us in a new covenant relationship with him. In Amos chapter 5, it says this. It's quite a famous expression. Let justice flow like a river. God's justice flowing like a river. Could we imagine the world we're in if God's justice flowed like a river? Wouldn't that be great? See all the things that are wrong in the world being washed and overcome by this river of justice. The only trouble is, justice applies to all of us. Justice applies to us, as well as to the bad, bad people in the world who we get so cross about and hear on the news and wish that something would happen. It applies to all of us. God's justice is for all of us, even for the small things that we've done or whatever we've done. So we need this ark to protect us from this wave of justice which will come upon the earth. This justice flowing like a river, it's not an easy river to be in. It's uncomfortable. We need saving just the same as everybody else. But as well as salvation, we've got salvation and we've got the covenant, there's a third thing as well. There's a sign of the covenant. There's a symbol, if you like, of God's new deal that he's making. If you imagine a story, just imagine a situation where there's a cake shop. I'm sure it wouldn't rival your cakes, Edna. But it's a lesser cake shop. But unfortunately, this cake shop wasn't doing so well in these current times. So they just weren't selling enough cakes. And they were on the point of going bankrupt. When suddenly they get a phone call from Buckingham Palace. And the Queen is having a garden party. She says, I'd love if you could provide me with 2,000 cakes for this garden party. And that's it. They're saved from bankruptcy. And they've got an ongoing deal with the palace. So they'll always have to provide cakes to the palace. So they've got business going forward. So they've been saved. They've been put in a new covenant agreement, if you like. Their future has been secured. But also there's a sign of the new covenant. And that is they can put above their shop by royal appointment. So they're saved. They're in this new covenant. They have a sign of the new covenant. Looking forward from the Old Testament to the New Testament, in Jeremiah chapter 31, it says this. See, Jeremiah is looking forward to a time of where Jesus is here and when things will change and there'll be this new covenant between God and people. It says this, I will put my law in their minds and I will write them on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people. So we are God's people. We're saved from God's judgment. We're put into a new relationship with God. And we have a sign of the new covenant. So what's the sign of the new covenant? Is it the cross? What is it? The sign of the new covenant is a thing we're going to do in a minute. It's communion. In Luke 22 verse 20 it says this. Jesus says, the cup, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. So when we celebrate communion, when we celebrate the Lord's Supper, we're celebrating this new covenant which Jesus has given to us. So we're saved, we're brought into this new covenant, and we've got a sign of it when we celebrate the Lord's Supper together. But there's even more when we think about it. Because we spend a moment being saved, don't we? We come before God, we ask for forgiveness for all the wrong things we've done, and Jesus saves us. And then we're in this new covenant. But the new covenant is a lifetime's job, isn't it? We're thinking about discipleship. What is discipleship? But being in this new covenant relationship with Jesus. That's what it means to be a disciple. That's what it means to be part of the kingdom of God. We're in this new covenant relationship. And we have the sign of it. We're signed, sealed and delivered into God's kingdom. What we need to do is we need to work out what plan God has for us as part of his kingdom, as part of this new covenant. We need to ask him what he wants us to do. I heard something really good the other day. I'll just use this to close with. We all need forgiveness and we can all be forgiven. That's the new covenant that Jesus offers. The people in Noah's time, they were saved and they were new covenant, but it all went wrong. It all failed. And they were back to square one within a couple of generations. But we have a new covenant in Jesus. A new hope. A new start. And a new life as part of his kingdom.